in the telephone and electronics of an A. Among the most active stocks on the New York Exchange, Ramada Inns up an A. Disney up 3/8. VCA up 1 5/8. Howard Johnson up an A. This is Brian McFadden reporting from New York.
The stock market began its recovery before reports appeared that the six Arab oil ministers meet in Cairo to discuss averting an open split with other ministers over continuing the oil boycott. The U.S. dollar closed at a three-month low today in Frankfurt, down more than 2 marks from the Friday's close. It was the lowest value since December 13. The Agriculture Department says the rapid increase in food prices during the year has treated middle and upper-income consumers comparatively easier than before. And Dow Jones interims at 2 o'clock Eastern Time showed the industrials 883.76. That's up 5.71. All stocks indexed at 52.75, up 0.37, or equivalent to a gain of 25 cents for the average price of a New York Stock Exchange common share. A moderate amount of volume, 12,870,000 shares. Len Nutling, responsible for our markets this afternoon from KURL AMFM. Len Bentling, your State Farm Insurance representative at 5th and Broadwater Avenue. Time is 12:15. Temperature unofficially is 46.
Well, they'll tell you these days, ladies and gentlemen, that anti-communism is old hat. But I've got a story to tell you that will contradict that opinion, and I'll be back in just a moment to share it with you.
The Center for American Studies presents Dr. Stuart McBurney on the Voice of Americanism. This nationwide program stands for free enterprise and freedom under God. Now, Dr. McBurney and his analysis of the news.
Most people listening today don't know this. Even the best informed probably don't remember it. Way back in 1961, the communists had a world meeting. I happened to be there. Oh, I wasn't an observer. It was just a sheer coincidence. But it was held in Moscow. And the one and only time I've ever been inside the Soviet Union was 1961. I went there because I had a chance on a trip that I was making on behalf of a religious organization that I was associated with. I had a few days off, and I had a chance to plan the trip to go into the Soviet Union. It just so happened, and it is a pure coincidence, that I was in Moscow at the very time that representatives of the Communist Party from all over the world were gathered. This was the time of the so-called split between Russia and China. Zhou Enlai, foreign minister then of the People's Republic of China, as some people call it, I call it Red China, walked out of the meeting, stalking out, in fact, in anger, supposedly, and announcing that there were irreconcilable differences between Moscow and Peking. Well, I don't believe that those differences were all that real, but it's possible that they are. But let's just think one moment about the implications. It wasn't communism that they disagreed over. On that, they were totally agreed. The thing that they supposedly disagreed on and had labored so hard to convince the world that they had pulled apart on, that issue was the matter of the structure of government within the communist idea. In other words, in the Soviet Union, it was the time of Khrushchev. It was the time of de-Stalinization. Stalin was dead, and they were out to try to do away with the cult of personality. But in the Soviet Union, while the committee, and that's what the word Soviet means, you know, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics means the Union of Committee-Run Socialist or Marxist-Leninist Republics, and that's a laugh. Anyhow, this association of states that have been seized by Leninist gangsters who call themselves Committee-Run or Soviet-Run, because the word Soviet means committee. Well, anyhow, they were meeting, and they were, of course, opposed in Russia, they said, to the way things were going in China, namely the government by a super figure, Mao Zedong. So the Russians pulled out their technicians from Red China, And America's entire foreign policy since that day has been built upon the supposition that there was a fundamental split between Russia and China, Red Russia and Red China, of course, and that someday they too might go to war, and that we had better be in a position where we could stay out of it and not let either one of them really overcome the other one. This is the Kissinger Doctrine, so that there could be, in the end, a balance of power. That is our foreign policy today, but it is based upon the concept that there is enmity between China and Russia. And the latest predictions are that there will be a war between China and Russia sometime in June of this year. In June, because at the border between the Soviet Union and Red China, they're pretty far up on the top of the world, and it gets awfully cold. So they better be fighting in the summertime rather than in the winter. That's the way the theory and the prediction goes. I don't predict that. But in any case, the idea is this. At best, at very best, it's a falling out between gangsters. And I still doubt the reality of that so-called division. It's true that at the lower echelons of power, the enmity is very real. But that can be healed by one single conference between Brezhnev and Zhou Enlai. All they have to do is get together and announce, we've settled our differences, and now we're all one communist camp, and we're out to take over the rest of the world and put the imperialists to an early grave. As Khrushchev said, bury them. All they've got to do is announce that, and I guarantee you, every single functionary of the entire hierarchy of both communist countries will snap into line just as fast as it's possible for human beings to flip-flop. You can remember how it was back in World War II. One day, all the communists in the United States were chanting, you have to stay out of war, because at that time, Stalin and Hitler were united in a pact indeed that brought on the war, and that made the Red Communists culpable, guilty, for helping to start World War II. We've forgotten that, haven't we? Because later on they fought the Germans. But you know, the war would never have been started had it not been for a pact between Hitler and Communist Stalin. The point I'm making, though, is this. The moment that Hitler decided to march against Stalin, that second, overnight, those communists all through America who were chanting, stay out of the war, flip-flopped. I saw them do it. I was old enough to comprehend what was going on. And in one day's time, in 24 hours, those who were preaching pacifism, stay out of the war, changed over and started to chant, get into the war, and oppose the Nazi beast. Now, if our homegrown communists could oppose Hitler, overnight, when the day before they'd been virtually praising him, then you may be quite sure that this whole so-called split between the Russians and the Chinese communists would be easily healed, instantly healed, any time the leaders of the two countries decided they'd had enough mileage out of it. And you see, communism, ladies and gentlemen, works by a principle called dialectical materialism, which interprets history thus. That history is made up of something like a pendulum that swings back and forth. And finally, the two extremes along which the pendulum runs and which it reaches are somehow merged, and a third position is found made up of contributions from both extremes. They call the one the thesis and the other the antithesis. And then they call that which comes out of the two, the synthesis. And thus they say that communism is going to be the synthesis of the extremes in our present society. So they frequently divide. Before Castro ever came to power in Cuba, there were three communist parties there. One that was peaceful, one that was for the labor unions, another for the students, and was quite violent. But the moment that the Castro Revolution succeeded, zip, that fast, those three communist parties came together Formerly, one had been thought to be more reasonable than the other two, and they had been thought to be so angry that they were permanent enemies, don't you believe it? The second, that the communist revolution became a success, and the fact all communist parties came together with a click of the heels, because they were together all along. But I'll not go over that, for what I want to point out to you today is this. It is today, therefore, not popular to be against communism because of something that happened at this conference where this division was supposed to have occurred back in the Soviet Union in 1961 when I was in Moscow. I stood outside the walls of the Kremlin and I watched the big old-fashioned, because that's all they had in those days, limousines come up to the door of the Kremlin and let these diplomats out from all communist countries in the world. And what did they decide at that conference? Not only to divide, and I've given a rather long exposition of why I seriously question the reality of that division. At best, it's a power struggle between gangsters, and at worst, it probably is a deceptive trap where the jaws are deliberately opened. But all that aside, the point that I want to make on this broadcast is simply this, that at that conference in Moscow in 1961, a little-known doctrine was formulated. It has come to be known by historians as anti-communism. It was a program launched by Khrushchev to destroy anti-communism. That in every country, the thing that was keeping the revolution from happening above everything else was anti-communism. So, this was the new program to marshal every possible weapon, every possible person, both those who were open communists and those who were open radicals, as well as secret communists, subversives, everybody they could, to totally mobilize the communist world, and particularly the communist world that is hidden inside the free world, to do away with, to make unpopular, anti-communism. In 1961, at that time, do you know that it was very common on television to see a motion picture with the communists as the villains? You've not seen one in quite some time. Have you guessed why? The campaign against anti-communism has succeeded. This is the era of détente. Well, let me say that communism hasn't changed. It's still an enemy, just as it was before. Here's a letter I have from a listener. Dear Dr. McBurney, I come from a small Baltic country, Latvia, that has been swallowed up by the big, ruthless, bloodthirsty Russian bear. And I know what it means to lose one's freedom. Unfortunately, too many Americans do not seem to cherish and protect their own. Someday, it may be too late. Keep up the good effort, for which I trust God will help you. And I enclose a small gift that I might assist the work that you're doing on radio. Please send me your publications. And this listener signs the name. That's news, ladies and gentlemen. Fresh news. And it's news that says that communism is still to be feared, even though it's not popular anymore. Well, listen to the next broadcast and see what I have for you then. And if your mind is not yet made up to continue to be, to return to being a strong anti-communist, I kind of think you will before the next broadcast is over. I'll be back then. But in the meantime, write us and help us through your support to keep the truth on the air and in print and before the American people. And I give you my promise, this program will never stop being anti-communist to the death. And we'll send you, in appreciation of your help and support, a brand new publication. It's about communism. 1974, Year of the Terrorist. You better believe it. You better read it. You better be prepared. It's coming. That's our prediction, and I've written and documented it for you. 1974, Year of the Terrorist. Write us today for it, and we'll send it as a gift of appreciation to share back a part of what you've made possible by your contribution.